Thanks, Chairman, and thanks to everybody in council for this opportunity to update the membership on our financial assessment report. My name is Ryan Lukemeyer from Baker Tilly. I'm a principal in our tribal services practice. And with you today, Shanna Daniels is also with our firm as well. She assists with our tribal accounting services practice. She's in attendance and will also be available after lunch, if there's additional follow-up or questions that membership has, she's going to be available.
Next slide. Are we on it? Oh, labs. There we are. Labs. So as we looked in and started jumping in with our lab, we send a lot of labs with LabCorp. In my past life and in this life, it seems LabCorp is maybe not the best partner with us. We have the space, and especially as we're growing, we have more, and we have the capability to do more of those labs in-house. So a lot of those labs that get sent out for general testing that take anywhere from 3 to 7 days to get back from LabCorp as a result, we're working on bringing those in-house so we can get them back and turned over within 45 minutes. So often by the time you even leave the clinic with your general visit, we'll have those numbers back so your physician can report on it and have a conversation if needed, or make adjustments in any medication or treatment path that's there. Right now, we're looking at, with the equipment and everything moving forward, we should be able to bump up to about 80 to 85% of all labs done in the clinic itself. So we have about a 15% send out once we get all our footprint and our model set in. Just this year or over the summer, we picked up an RSV testing equipment. It's a rapid RSV. We didn't have this last winter and things like that. A lot of our kids, we had to send over the hill into Mad River or St. Joe's just to be tested for RSV. RSV is one of the top mortality diseases among kids under the age of 2. Clogs up the nose, it's a respiratory distress. It's very significant. If they come positive, we want to get on it and start treating it early, as fast as possible. So that was a nice test, and that one's rapid. It comes back, we get those results usually within 30 minutes of doing that test on our youth. We added iStat machines. iStat machines, it looks like the old cell phones on there. They're fairly good size. This is something that goes with our mobile outreach. So if you're in your home, they can actually draw some blood, take a look, and run some basic results. So they can get a chemistry panel, maybe an ABG if you're a respiratory patient that's struggling breathing. They get quite a bit, or even some of the blood thinner tests on there. So we're excited to get moving down that direction to add more enhanced services. Then next slide, jumping into our MAP program. Our MAP program, meeting with the MAP team and areas there, we started looking at what are the needs. What are the needs in the community? Where are we at? One of the top needs that was brought up is we're missing a lot of our members. We have especially with the new chemicals and drugs that are out, are really tough to detox off of. A lot of the detox programs that are out there these days are still old school. They work great for some of the older medications, but they don't work for these new ones. Fentanyl, carfentanil, all those are extremely potent, very hard drugs for the body to let go of. So with that, started touching base with colleagues within the community and working with Judy, working with Dawn. We found an inpatient detox program at Mad River. So Mad River has an inpatient. We're going to start working with them and from a door-to-door. They'll do it 3 to 5 days, and then we will send on out to our rehabs and go from there. And we're almost done here, guys. We have our behavioral health program. Jump in there, as Chairman Joe talked about, getting in and working with the school. We're working on bringing on 3 more psychologists, LCSWs, LMFTs, to be able to help with our youth, help with our families, because we see that we work with one entity within the community, the child, but we need that wraparound care. We need the whole family in there. So on that, with behavioral health, that's probably our biggest change and our biggest move forward. Our sobriety camp was one of the largest sobriety camps that we had this yet to date, over 100 people. Next slide. Jumping in real quick, I'll touch base on these ones from Behavior Health. Probably the biggest part is our Narcan. One of the things I want to just highlight is between our EMS. EMS last year was distributed roughly 77 Narcans. Year to date, we're at 36 on that, half of what we did last year. Now, the dispense downtown is staying in roughly 1,900 to 2,000, but we have not had any adverse effects within the community, meaning we have not come across any members that have passed away yet to date this year from drug use on that, that Narcan could not help. So a lot of them are self-administering. And then last one up is our picture, as I'm jumping through, is the new behavioral health building, and that comes to fruition the end of next year. So the behavioral health building right up to the side of it will be a brand new building that Harley and his team are working with and expanding our behavioral health model within the community. Okay, guys, and then I think that's what I have for the moment is just a quick highlight as the overall of the medical center. All right, thank you, Jim.
All right, we're going to we got about 20 minutes behind schedule. We did start about 10 or 15 minutes late. That was mostly just because there weren't a lot of people here right at 10. But we're going to go next to our Baker and Tilly, formerly known as Moss Adams, financial report. And then we'll have education do their report right after lunch instead of before. So we'll skip to the financial report, and then we'll move on to lunch. We have a local tribal member-owned business, MF Cravings, working with the 8th grade to serve you guys lunch. So let's go ahead and go to Baker and Tilly.
Thanks, Chairman, and thanks to everybody in council for this opportunity to update the membership on our financial assessment report. My name is Ryan Lukemeyer from Baker Tilly. I'm a principal in our tribal services practice. And with you today, Shanna Daniels is also with our firm as well. She assists with our tribal accounting services practice. She's in attendance and will also be available after lunch, if there's additional follow-up or questions that membership has, she's going to be available since she was a key member in assisting the tribe. I know a few of you have seen me before. We've talked to membership about our financial assessment. More this particular time that I have with you today is really following up on some of the items that membership asked for with our report that we provided. I understand that there's printed reports in the back of the building or in the back of the room there where you can see detail about all the work we performed and a bit more of the analysis. Again, this particular time that I have about 15 minutes will be really focused on just hitting some of the updates that we've had. Since August, we met with membership then, and they asked some follow-up questions on our report and wanted to update the membership as a whole on that. So that's the process for today. And so here's our agenda. I'm just going to go ahead and dive right in to these particular areas. And we would like to answer any questions right after this. However, we can help make sure that this stuff is making sense and that we're providing the information that you need. If I wouldn't mind, just real quickly, I know that maybe there's a few folks there today that are maybe trying to understand what Baker Tilly is doing to assist the tribe. And just a real quick, for me, in my background, I've specialized working with tribes all over the country for almost 25 years now. This is my area of expertise, as Shanna's as well, who's there. Our firm assists many tribes with audit, accounting work, assisting and identifying financial matters that might need some area of assistance. I think what benefit, a big benefit that we can provide is we're here to, we're simply independent of the tribe. So in regards to management spin, politics, et cetera, that's just not our value is simply providing objective information so you can understand simply what's going on with the financial resources of the tribe, okay? And so our report that we have in the back covers a lot of what we discussed and some of the findings that we had. But in a summary here, just a couple of major updates that we've had in working with the tribe, but we've done a lot to help support the tribe's 2023 audit preparation process, assisted with various reconciliations and bank accounts. We've actually gone pretty far back into the books of the tribe, primarily about 10 to 15 years ago when the tribe converted to a new accounting system. We assisted in trying to resolve some of the differences that occurred during that conversion. We've also provided a lot of guidance on drawdowns, funding assistance, funding analysis, cash flows. You know, with the tribe, there's been in the past some concern that although some months might have adequate cash flow in the bank accounts, there's other months in the year where cash is very short. So we were looking at this with finance to identify, number one, how to smooth that out, how to, you know, when money comes in and money goes out, to ensure that there's never going to be a problem with potentially the bank account not having enough cash. A big part of that was looking at when the tribe has certain cost reimbursement grants, which means the tribe has to use their own funding first to cover the cost. Then they request a reimbursement from the federal estate agency. We looked at that to determine how quickly is that getting converted back to cash? How quickly is the tribe getting reimbursed? So we've identified some areas there that we've addressed with the tribe. We've also looked at, in regards to accounting, there are what we refer to as accounts receivables, which simply means that it's a way for the tribe to recognize that, hey, a third-party entity owes the tribe a certain dollar amount. How quickly is the tribe collecting on that? Because the longer something like that remains outstanding, the likelihood of not collecting the full amount, it gets increased. So we also looked at regarding what we refer to as related party receivables, which are simply the tribe's standalone businesses that might be borrowing money from the tribe. How quickly are those enterprises and are they reimbursing the tribe back for those outstanding amounts? So anyway, I just wanted to give you a quick update. We've done various financial assessments beyond this, but I wanted to provide a quick summary. We also, on October 21st, which is next Tuesday, we're hosting a compliance training for the tribe as a whole to understand some of the new federal requirements. I know it's a bit unique right now with a federal shutdown and the impact there, but that doesn't stop the need to ensure that we're still complying with grant requirements. And we're going to talk to the team about some of those recent updates that are going to be impactful to the tribe. So I'm just going to jump right in, talk again, the focus here, just three areas of updates that membership had back in August. Wanted to provide a bit more context. The first is on the related party receivables. Many of you might be familiar with this same slide. These are the standalone businesses of the tribe and the amounts that each one of the businesses owe the tribe at the end of September 30th, 2023. And what we've done here is identified, okay, what is the risk just from an independent observation, looking at the business's financial statements, the history of collections, and other types of matters, what is the likelihood that this particular amount will never be collected back to the tribe? And so the risk here is highlighted. You'll see the high obviously means that we're a bit concerned that the tribe is not going to collect this full amount from these businesses. HFI, I'm going to, because HFI has the largest amount that's considered high risk, we do talk a bit more here in a second about HFI's financial information. So I'm going to cover them a little bit more. But they've had some losses in 22 and 23, and they really haven't paid the tribe back for this dollar amount that's outstanding since 2022. Very similar situation with the casino. For each one of these, I'm going to cover the detail of what they were borrowing from the tribe. So I'm going to cover that here in a second. But with the casino, we rated that as high given the similar issue. When I talk about net losses for 2023 and 2024, it simply means that more money went out than money that came into that particular business. So in that situation, it's obviously going to be hard for them to pay back money to the tribe when they're not collecting or not having a net income or an amount of where excesses revenues exceed the expenses. And there's been no payments since July of 24. Roads, $962,000 is outstanding at the end of September. There hasn't been a payment since September of 22. And there's a concern with Roads that what we found is that audits really have not been up to date for Roads. And the financial system, the data that's coming out of the accounting system is simply not reliable at this time. Grocery has the largest amount, but most of that's relating to a loan that the tribe backed for grocery. But the fact is that it's medium because they are paying. The loan is getting paid on their monthly debt service. It's just that we're still concerned, even though there's some positive equity positions of grocery, but there just simply hasn't been any payment to the tribe for the amount outstanding as well, just to the third party. So I'm going to cover a little bit more detail here, but you'll see in this particular chart, this is everything owed from the tribal businesses to the tribe for the last 10 to 11 years. You can see the significant rise in the amounts outstanding. In 2019, that's when that $4.2 million loan the grocery needed was obtained. So that obviously raised this dollar amount, but it continues to rise. And then the next slide, the very last column is 2025. The first column is 2015. So you can see the presentation throughout the years of the continuous rise in the outstanding amounts from these various businesses. The next slide here, very similar format, but kind of showing a breakdown of what was borrowed and why we were needing to provide money to the businesses. You can obviously see that loan is the most significant amount for grocery. But the orange is what you're going to see a theme here. There have been, since COVID, a significant rise in assisting these businesses with their payroll costs. But the fact is that the payment to provide for the payroll that period hasn't been provided back to the tribe. So these amounts are accumulating over time. And then I want to jump into just real quickly on an individual basis, looking at HFI. This is their amount outstanding and what it represents. And since 2015, again, that orange number or that orange line is really the payroll that's just continued to rise. It really has flattened out since about 2023 to current. That's a good thing. Essentially, what that's telling us is that HFI hasn't needed to rely on the tribe the past few years to pay for their payroll. But the fact is that there's still a lot outstanding that is supposed to be repaid but hasn't. The black line, you can see that it's going back and forth pretty often. which is simply meaning that this is just part of the accounts payable, accounts receivable process for the tribe in assisting HFI. Payments are made, disbursements are provided through the tribe, but then paid back through HFI. So it's kind of all over the place. The payroll is the area that I'm more focused on. If there is an intent to have HFI pay the tribe back, there is a significant amount outstanding. On the casino side, similar situation here. Most of the balance that's due to the tribe and was provided to the casino to pay for payroll costs. So that's in this orange number. Some amounts have been paid. That's when the line decreases. But you can obviously see since 2019, there's been a steady rise in payroll provided and supporting the casino. Payments made in 2023, but then it's pretty flat the last couple of years. Okay, just a couple more. But this is with roads. A little different here with roads. You can obviously see with the orange column or orange line that that's payroll. Payroll hasn't really been as much of a factor as providing roads and money to support their general businesses. This blue line is for other expenses, which simply means just regular vendor payments, contractor payments, etc. The tribe has been paying for a portion of those amounts, and then it has risen recently, but no payment has been provided back to the tribe for that. Two more left here with grocery. Grocery is unique because of that $4.2 million loan. The tribe shows that or obtained that for grocery and intends on grocery paying that back. Grocery has been, but they haven't been collecting on this receivable back to the tribe or paying it back to the tribe. So it's remained relatively flat. But a majority, you've seen a little bit of a rise in grocery in utilizing the accounts payable functions of the tribe, but there hasn't been a payment back, but it's pretty small at this point, even though there's a slight increase. And finally, credit, which is the smallest amount. The majority is payroll. There has been an uptick since 2023 in providing for a minor amount of other expenses and accounts payable. But the payroll is really where I'm focused on. There was like a little bit before COVID, there was some repayment of this payroll, but there really hasn't been in the last few years. So there's overall, hitting these dollar amounts and talking to you about this, it's really been a situation where the tribe at the end of the day has been supporting these businesses, paying for the payroll costs, and the tribe is intending on those businesses paying that back, but it simply hasn't happened. So I wanted to provide a bit more detail on that. Now, I wanted to talk a bit more about the HFI's financial results, the most recent information here for the membership. And this is hopefully it's not too busy here. There's a lot of information to show you on this particular slide. However, I do want to simply state that we're looking at revenues and expenses of HFI from 2023, 2024, and 2025. And just for definition's sake, revenues are money coming into HFI and expenses are money going out. So the net impact, which we call net income, you can see in 2023, there was a $50,000 loss, which simply, again, means that more expenses and revenues. But we did have a nice little net income amount in 2024 of $394,000. But then in 2025, there's another net loss of $213,000. So it's really fluctuated over the course of the past 3 years. What we did is correlate that because there were questions from membership about why would there be a difference in the amount of the net income, money coming in versus money going out, and the net increase decrease in HFI's cash balance. you can see here that in 2023, net income loss of $50,000, but increase and decrease in cash of a negative $96,000. I want to be clear about the accounting for revenues and expenses. And this is not just with HFI or the tribe, but every single entity throughout the country has to follow what is referred to as generally accepted accounting principles. So what that means is that accounting standards require you to match the revenue to the expenses. So there could be what we refer to as accruals, which, for example, the tribe or HFI might have had a service conducted in September, but that invoice wasn't paid until October. Well, because the service was provided in September, that's when you recognize the expense, and even though cash wasn't paid till the next month. So we always have to factor that in mind. Now, the biggest thing you'll see here, the explanation here, and I'm going to focus on 2025 because this is an interesting one, okay? Because you have net income or net loss of $213,000, but you had an increase in cash of $460,000. Now, the reason for that difference is pretty much two things. In 2025, the HFI did have a contract with the tribe to provide some services, but received the cash in advance. Well, in accordance with those accounting standards, you can't even though you got all HFI got all that cash up front, you can't recognize that until the service is provided. So over the course of that time period, revenue is recognized. But that's an increase to your cash. The other thing is that part of your expenditure numbers are what is referred to as depreciation expense, which is simply saying that when you acquire equipment, equipment is an asset to HFI. But what you don't record that as an expenditure, you have it as an asset. And what you do is you recognize depreciation over the course of the useful life of that particular asset, which provides a bit of expenses over the course of that 5 or 10 year useful life of that particular asset. So those are the main differences. But again, that's why 2025 was a little unique, and I wanted to hopefully provide a bit more clarity on that. And then finally, I know kind of running out on time here. I did want to the indirect cost fund. I wanted to show this to everybody. We've had a lot of conversation about this. Essentially, what's happening here is the tribe negotiates with the federal government to fund the administrative costs of the tribe that are providing assistance and services to their federally funded programs. Well, over the course of the years, since 2012, the tribe has actually had a deficit, which simply means that although you have a certain amount of administrative costs that you're funding through your general fund and unrestricted resources, you're not getting all of that paid back to you from the federal government. Now, this obviously has been it's gotten down to the point where simply it's about $9.9 million of a deficit at the end of 2025. This is unfortunately a common issue with the federal government and not providing their obligation to completely support tribal entities' administrative costs to fund these grant-funded programs. It's very unfortunate. There have been settlements recently for this particular matter because class action suits have been brought about by the tribe to the federal government, more particularly the REMA settlement a few years ago, provided $12 million of funding as a settlement to cover backdated indirect costs that hadn't been reimbursed. And there was a recent settlement in the Supreme Court also where there's an opportunity to take a look back approach to try to collect monies back. At this point, though, it's very unlikely that the tribe will be able to collect any more of this outstanding $9.9 million deficit. And we've There's a few options that Tribe can take, and this is a busy slide, but really there could be either the Tribe can continue to leave this balance on there, but it's not going to really get to the point where they're going to collect that ever, because that's still outstanding, and there's not a mechanism right now to provide money to fund that deficit. So there's an option two, which would be a write-off, which simply means, hey, this is just never going to be paid back. So we're going to go ahead and write this off to the general fund, because we're just simply never going to be able to repay the general fund back this $9.9 million. So that's what this spreadsheet is trying to show on the screen here. The general fund and your indirect cost fund, what the balances were for various asset, liability, and equity accounts, what the recommended adjustment looks like, and then at the end of the day, what would happen if you did make that adjustment. It does put a situation where it shows a more truer financial situation of the tribe's general fund. And my last slide, I really covered this. I think a lot of questions occurred here. Who has been funding these administrative costs that have not been completely reimbursed by the federal government? Quite simply, it's been the tribe's general fund that's been covering these deficits over the course of this time period, primarily through pausing payments to cover the group health and workers' comp premiums to fund it. And this slide covers what the other slide showed. If the balance is adjusted, the general fund's ending equity balance comes to about $4 million, which is would show a truer position of where the general fund is at. I'm sorry if I went over, I apologize, but right now, are there any questions that I can take?
Okay, so copies of the presentation that can be provided, I believe through fiscal, right? And then the also after lunch, everybody can feel free to ask the council questions, our managers, we'll get to that. But if there's no other questions for Ryan, we can head off to lunch. Does anyone have a question for Ryan? All right, we'll go ahead and break for lunch, and then we'll come back for tribal member comments and questions. We'll also have a quick presentation from the Education Department after lunch. Thanks.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Annalise Colgrove. I'm the Education Director for Hoopa Tribal Education. I've been serving in my role for 2 years now, and I wanted to do a broad overview of updates from our programs and also talk a little bit about our scholarship opportunities along with some new programs that will be starting soon. So just to give a broad overview of our programs and what we have in education, we have our education main office, which houses our admin staff and administers our scholarships as well as our MMIP grant. We have our early childhood facility, which houses our Head Start and early Head Start programs, along with our after school program, which serves our kindergarten through fourth grade students. We have our Indian Center JOM program, which houses and works with K through 12th grade. We have after school program opportunities for K through 8th grade, and then tutoring all the way from K through 12th grade. We also have our HOOPA higher education programs, which houses our HCOTEP program and our now HCOTEEP program as well, and I can talk a little bit about that later on. And then towards the end, I want to talk about some of our new programs and opportunities that we will be announcing here soon with the Vogue Rehab program and then also Boys and Girls Club relaunch. So I wanted to give a broad overview of some of our scholarship opportunities. I don't think we can always do a lot more to start advertising these opportunities to the community and just to remind people that we do have these opportunities available for tribal members. So the first one is our tribal grant and scholarship. So these are for students who are pursuing college and also trade school. So for students, we prorate the scholarships based on their GPA and also how many units they're taking. So a student must have at least 6 units and a minimum 2.0 GPA to qualify for this scholarship. So this scholarship can also be used for master degree programs and higher level programs and can be combined with adult vocational trade scholarship opportunities as well. We also have our HOOPA Higher Education Scholarship, which was previously our BIA scholarship. So this opportunity is specifically for students who are attending college or university and who are full-time students. So you must have a minimum 2.0 GPA, and they're eligible to up to $5,000 per academic year. I really wanted to take some time to highlight this one. This is our Adult Vocational Training Scholarship. This pot of money is available for students who are attending any kind of trade or program or are requesting work assistance. So this money is pretty flexible, and awards are determined by the education board. So amounts vary, but some of the things that we funded before is we've seen a lot of people go through cosmetology for learning how to cut hair and do barber school. We've also seen some people go into the fire academy. We've had medical assistants. We've had linemen. We've had some culinary. We've had some people even go and take some herbal studies classes. And so it's a pretty broad range for whatever kinds of trades or trainings that people are looking to go into and get certificates or degrees in. So for that award, we do just require the scholarship application, the letter of intent, and also the itemized list of expenses. And if you have any questions on these scholarships, you can feel free to contact our office, specifically Pamela Branham, and she can help anyone walk through some of these applications and opportunities. So just a little, some updates with our programs. For our Head Start, we have 3 Head Start classes and 4 early Head Start classes. We've been doing a lot of language integration along with acorn gathering and just doing more cultural programming with our programs. But the main thing I really wanted to highlight here is that we're still seeking enrollment for mothers in our prenatal program and then also children into our Head Start program. So these programs offer a different side of education than what TK offers. We've seen some people have some challenges in TK, just with the larger class sizes, less hands-on, whereas we're able to offer more of those hands-on opportunities for our little ones. I also wanted to highlight that we're looking for members for our policy council for this academic year. So any parents or community members looking to provide some input on our policy council, please feel free to reach out to Angel Korb, the manager for the program, if you have interest. The biggest update, though, is that we were awarded an expansion grant for our programs. So we will be getting more money specifically to help bring up wages to be more competitive with the Yurok tribe and the school district. So one of the goals with Head Start across the nation is to get comparable wages to local education agencies. So our after-school program, so this is our next age range of students. We serve K through 4th. We have 20 children enrolled there, and again, we're doing a lot of programming with culture and taking them out on field trips, and this was a picture from one of the field trips where they went and did some acorn gathering. Right now, we actually have a competition out open to the community and children as well. Whoever finds the largest acorn this year, we have one for kids and one for adults, and the winner will receive $100 to the HOOPA grocery store. Next slide. So our Indian Center JOM, so right now there are 22 students enrolled in the after school. There's still in-school tutoring opportunities available if you would like to sign up your student or if your student is looking to receive more academic assistance, reach out to Ashton Colgrove at the Indian Center to get them signed up for tutoring. And again, still just doing cultural programming, integration there. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Acorn Warrior Camp. So this past summer, we did it a little bit differently. We went with a smaller group of kids between girls and boys. We split them up and did 2 separate camps just to be more intentional with the programming and just have more hands-on with the individual students. That seemed to work really well, but we're still workshopping how that looks coming down the line. So if you would like to provide input, feel free to contact myself or reach out to Ashton, and we're looking to have more of those conversations this year to start planning for Acorn Warrior Camp. The Indian Center will also be doing another Christmas gift drive, so keep an eye out for more information on that if you would like to donate to that as well. Here are some pictures from our warrior camp. We took them down to go check out some of the ceremonial sites, and we also did some demonstrations on putting together fish nets, and then we also had fisheries walk them through kind of what's been going on with the creek restoration. Next slide. And then another some other highlight pictures from our acorn camp. We actually had them go through the whole process of preparing acorns with our cultural coordinator, Dana Rose. And everything went really well with the smaller group of students and just being more intentional with all of the programming. So this is our HOOPA higher education program. We have some really great updates here. So we're finishing up the year 5 of a 5-year grant cycle. We've been funded for the next cycle as well. But something new that we will be introducing is the HCAW-TEAP program that started rolling out this past year. We have another staff member who works specifically with outreach to high school students. And so just trying to get them more prepared as to understanding what it is that they want to do after high school and getting them connected to CR at an earlier age. We're still working on a MOA with College of the Redwoods. Those conversations are going well. Dr. Keith Flamer, the president of CR, is really a really great partner in working with us and the tribe, and he's really wanting to bring more opportunities for students, so that's still in the works as well. Next slide. I talked a little bit about how we work with students. We specifically utilize the Myers-Briggs assessment, and so that just helps them gain a better understanding of what their aptitudes are and what their interests are and potential career opportunities and pathways. We're wanting to do more college tours, and we're also going to be doing more job workshops, resume workshops, interview workshops down the line working with students in the high school age range, but also for students attending our KTIS campus. So something new that came out with our funding is that we received an additional one-time funding increase, but it had to be unduplicated programming, so something that we hadn't been already doing and providing. And for the first time, we've actually been able to secure some funding for students who have gone through KTIS and have been an HCAW-TEP student. If they are now transferring to Cal Poly Humboldt, we are able to provide gas stipends for them as well. So for our students who are HCAW-TEP students who start here but have to commute to the main campus, we've been able to provide gas voucher stipends. But now for our students who have come to us first with KTIS, HCAW-TEP, and are now going to Cal Poly Humboldt, we're able to provide them some additional assistance as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about our MMIP grant. This rolled out this past year. So some of the main goals of the grant were to provide culture as prevention around MMIP. So I initially reached out to other programs across the tribe just to see if anyone else wanted to apply for this MMIP grant before education, just because we weren't planning on doing intervention at that level, but more so prevention and looking at it from that perspective. So some of the main goals is culture as prevention, and we're also wanting to support education and access to education. And so what that looks like is thinking about how to build more capacity in the community for assisting students navigate education, specifically students with learning disabilities, and how to navigate the IEP process for families and how they go about doing that at the school. So just getting more training and knowledge around those areas, and also providing some support in the community by training individuals to help and aid families in that process. We also have some money to do more trainings around how to be more trauma-informed in the community, and so we'll be offering more trainings in the future. So just wanted to highlight some of the great work that our cultural coordinator, Dana Rose Colgrove, has been doing. She's been really great in finding and making connections across the tribal structure, across different departments, and doing programming within education, also at the school, and for all age ranges, not just our kids, but elders as well. She's been going and leading acorn gathering initiatives in our education programs, taking elders out, and also getting more people just connected and involved in advocacy, but also cultural programming and engagement. Next slide. Okay, there we go. So we went through a period where we did not receive the HOOPA Yurok Vocational Rehabilitation Grant. That was a 5-year grant. We had a 1-year lapse in funding. I reapplied for the grant, but some of the major changes that I made was that the service area was a really large service area. It was in combination with the Yurok tribe, but for this go-around, I made it specifically to the Hoopa area, and so our people and staff aren't having to commute all the way to Crescent City and serve other individuals in a farther range. And so now it's located specifically in the Hoopa area. We have grant funding for 5 years. However, there's been some delays with the federal government shutdown because the grant was supposed to start October 1. However, I'm not able to access my my contact person to get some key things approved before I'm able to fly job descriptions. So that's in the works, and we'll see those positions flying soon. So Chairman Joe Davis made this announcement a little earlier about a new launch of a new program in education. We will be taking on 5 new staff to work specifically with our youth. We will be reopening the youth center and relaunching the Boys and Girls Club to partially fund this initiative. We will also be working in collaboration with TANF and the school district to really implement this program to have people in the school providing academic support, but also mentoring opportunities in the school, but then after school as well. And I'm wanting to gear this more towards our teen students who currently don't really have anywhere to go or any strong set of supports available to them at this time. So that's still coming down the line. It's in development. We still have a lot more conversations to be had on how this really comes into fruition, but this is something I'm really excited to be working on. And along with that, I'm wanting to start a youth council and just get more youth involved. We saw some youth here helping serve, but other than that, we don't really see too many youth in these spaces or wanting to, or maybe it's even just not knowing how to access these spaces to be able to share their voice. So wanting to start a youth council so that they can get their voice here at the table as well. This is a picture from our career fair that we had yesterday. We had a really great turnout. It was really great to see the different tribal entities and programs present. And also when I had people fill out the form to RSVP, everyone stated some level of interest of wanting to go and present at the schools directly after the career fair was over. So that's really great to see. And at the career fair, I also asked the youth if they were interested in being a part of the youth council process, and we got 50 students who indicated some level of interest in being involved in the youth council. So that's something that's really exciting. But other than that, that's all the updates I have, but I will be around, so feel free to ask any questions. Also, if you grabbed reports before 10:15, you probably missed educations, but the education reports should be back on the table now. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalise. You know, a lot of hard work and effort goes into this new funding that's been coming out through education, so we thank them for their hard work, and that's exciting. So Darren Mastin's here. He'd like to share some things on the DeNoto Corporation, so I'll turn it over to Darren, and then we'll go to all you for questions and comments for the council and for managers.
So I just want to take a few minutes. I know I'm the only person between you and a lot of the questions that you guys are wanting to ask, so I won't take much of your time, but I do want to give an update on DeNoto. That's one of the things that I would say that the DeNoto Holding Corporation that we've created, one of our biggest struggles is really giving you guys updates on a regular basis. So we're trying to do that. We're trying to improve on that. But I'm going to go through just kind of a current update. I want to start by just kind of reiterating what DeNoto is about. We've had our annual meeting earlier this year, but I think anytime we have the opportunity to kind of just reestablish what is DeNoto and what are we doing and what's it for. So next slide. So DeNoto is a separately chartered entity, right? DeNoto exists of a voluntary board. There are 5 of us. Myself, I'm the chairman of the board. I'm a business owner. My company, Clear Cloud Solutions. We have 70 employees across the country. I also acquired Whitson's last year, so I bring some business knowledge to help with the board and the tribal enterprises. Michelle McCovey-Good is a CEO of an engineering firm. She has offices in Pasadena, San Luis Obispo, and the Bay Area. Amanda Colgrove, working for IHS on the coast. Lauren Norton, you all know Lauren. a very accomplished contracting, contracting licensed individual running an enterprise or an entity for the tribe today. And then Steve Caligeris, so some of you know, is an attorney, used to be the tribal attorney, and he's an attorney working out of the Bay Area. So obviously our focus is economic development. The tribe does own Denodo. It is a part of the tribe. Obviously, the goal of Denodo is the goal that the other tribes kind of took this roadmap years ago by making sure that they take some of the burden off the existing council so that they can focus on government contracting, business, and helping run the enterprises while the council runs the government in conjunction, together, in partnership. Next slide. So what's our goal? It's really simple. It's economic development. And how do we want to do that? We want to do it with federal government contracting. There are tremendous opportunities in the federal contracting arena that the government makes available to tribes. It's a tremendous opportunity. I'm going to cover that very briefly. We want to boost the economic opportunities of the existing enterprises. We want to lend business expertise and try to organize the existing enterprises so that they run like businesses, for-profit businesses, not departments of the tribe. And then most importantly, and what I'm very passionate about, and we haven't got to spend a lot of time on, but that's helping the local entrepreneurs here. How is it that we can help lend experience, guidance, mentorship for people that want to start businesses, people that have businesses? How do they grow their businesses? Sharing my experiences, what I did wrong, and that's very near and dear to all of our heart that's on the board. So let's talk about a couple strategic business plans. I'm going to go over these slides very quickly because these are things that we have accomplished. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that exists to just standing up and creating Denodo. And these are all things that have already been accomplished. So obviously the Section 17, the corporation that was developed was a Section 17. That was decided by the council long before the board was ever selected. And the Section 17 gives the tribe opportunities to have tax benefits by operating businesses off tribal land, but taking the same advantages that we have on the tribe. The board has been, I mentioned the board of directors has been selected. We've got bylaws. We hired an experienced CEO. We didn't have anybody local that would have the experience for government contracting, knowledge of 8A and all that. So Joel Schultz, and several of you have met Joel. Joel is a tribal member from the Sault Ste. Marie out of Michigan. He's got a lot of experience in 8A contracting, and he's developed and stood up four very successful 8As and took his existing tribe to over $150 million in the period of time that he was there, and now he works for us. And then we've opened up our business account. Next slide. The other couple things that we did with our legal team early on that took some time was we developed the corporate structure for the tribe so that Denodo can operate as an LLC under the tribe, so that the corporations that we will develop, so there's Denodo Holding Corporation, and underneath Denodo Holding Corporation, there will be other corporations. The first corporation that we stood up is Denodo Technologies, because we feel that's a vertical that we could go after federal contracting in. So that's all been completed. We also, while we were creating that with the legal team, we also created a structure so that individual business owners on the tribe can have an LLC, and you could have it as a tribal LLC, not tribally owned, but under the tribe. So today, if I create a business, I can be a California corporation, I can be a California LLC, I can be any state I want, right? Delaware, a lot of people have Delaware corporations. But you act under the guidance of that state. If you develop your LLC under a tribal LLC, you get the tax benefits that you would by living on the tribe. So and that's going to be hopefully ready for the LPA process very soon. And that's something all of you can take advantage of. And then, we did some resolutions which gives management some joint oversight along with the council. Next slide. We've got a website, LinkedIn profile. Next slide. So let's start with just why federal contracting. I'm going to go over these slides very quickly just to remind everybody why federal contracting and why the 8A program and what does the 8A program have as a benefit. The 8A program is a program that every individual, everybody sitting in here, can attempt to qualify to be an 8A. It's a certification. It takes a long time. You don't just pull out your tribal roll card and say, hey, here you are, I'm tribal and become 8A. It's a very lengthy process. You have to qualify for it as an individual. You have to be a disadvantaged individual. Although all tribes And by the way, tribes are the only ethnicity, the only people that are designated by the United States Congress as disadvantaged, the only one. But you don't qualify for that because the members don't. The tribes do, but the members don't. So an individual 8A can get federal sole sourcing contracts from the federal government. If you you have to be in business 2 years, you have to make a lot of qualifications. But once you become an 8A, you can be sole sourced federal contracts from the federal government up to about $4 or $5 million, not to exceed $23-24 million in 1 year. And it's a 9-year program. And when you graduate, your carriage turns into a pumpkin and you are done. You can continue with your business, but you no longer can take advantage of those sole source federal contracts. Tribes are different. What's different about tribes? Single sole source for tribes most of the time have a much higher ceiling. With the Department of Defense, the single sole source for the government to issue you a contract is $99 million, and it can be signed off to go over that. While each of the 8As that would be stood up by a tribe do last for 9 years, when one gets up and it hits year 7, you can throw another one in an incubator, and you can have several and multiple 8As operating at the same time. When one lands, another can take off. So they are basically tremendous opportunities that tribes across the country are taking advantage. Alaska Native corporations, lower 48 tribes, as well as Hawaiian national organizations are doing, in some instances, billions of dollars with the federal government. Next slide. I'm not going to go into this in detail, but $23 million in 2023 was spent on tribal businesses from 8A contracts and those type of sourcing. And that's not grants. We're not talking about grants. We're talking about doing business with the federal government. Why did the federal government create this program? They created this program because they want to see tribes stand up on their own. They don't want the tribes to be 100% dependent on the federal government. This gives them an opportunity to build resources and build self-sufficiency within the tribes. Next slide. So let's talk about where we're at in that 8A process. So we've created those federal enterprises that I mentioned. Denodo Technologies has been created. The 8A process itself takes, for an individual, anywhere from 3 to 6 months. For a tribe, anywhere from 6 to 12 months. The average on that would be 9 months. However, at the end of last year, the portal shut down, and it was shut down for almost half a year. So we had that delay, and now the federal government is shut down. The good news is our 8A application has been submitted. So now we're just answering questions to the federal government. They're qualifying us, and it takes a while, but you know we're expecting the process in its entirety to be about 12 months. So what are we doing in the meantime? Denodo and the corporations, it's our job right now to develop past performances. Once you develop an 8A and you have Denodo Technologies, they don't just hand you contracts. You have to develop past performance. You have to show that you're worthy. You have to build an infrastructure, okay? There's a lot of boxes to be checked to do business in the federal contracting. That's why we hired the CEO that we hired, because he has a lot of business in establishing. And right now, a lot of the heavy lifting is in just preparing the enterprise to do business on the federal level.